We start today with Eric with a story that really began towards the end of last year, and that is we've come to a decision. We've come to an agreement. The parting of the ways between the Los Angeles Kings and Mike Richards, a deal which sees the Kings have, some sort of cap penalty or something count against their caps till 2031 for divesting themselves of this player.
Interesting story, and an important story too. You know, the one thing about it, because I heard you in the promo saying that you thought it smelled a little bit from your perspective.
Yes.
Well, so to recap for people that haven't been following it as closely as we have, that you know the Kings terminated Mike Richards' contract, for reasons of what they said, a material breach, and you know in the meantime, he was charged with the possession of prescription drug crossing the border. So the case was going, I mean, the matter still has to be dealt with legally in Emerson, Manitoba in the early part of December. But the more important thing from a National Hockey League perspective was the Kings were trying to get out of, paying him $22 million over the last 5 years because of this material breach that they argued. And it was going to arbitration, although no date had been set yet. But George Nikolaou, who's, arbitrated, lots and lots of important sports decisions in the past, couple of decades, has already been appointed an arbitrator. So, an arbitration in this particular case works like a court of law. You have a judge, and there's either like a guilty verdict or a not guilty verdict. So you're either going to jail or you're going to be free. It's an either-or situation. And in this particular case, both sides had a lot to lose. So the National Hockey League Players Association had filed this grievance on behalf of Mike Richards. And if they lost, then this would open the door for other teams to claim a material breach for any number of things. And I think that was a can of worms that they weren't that interested in pursuing. So they had a vested interest in settling. And the Kings did too. I mean, I think that they, in their particular case, they did not, they made a mistake when they didn't offer a buyout to Richards 2 years ago when those would have been amnestied and it would have just cost them the dollars on the contract. So, there was a risk that if they had lost the case, they would be on the hook for the full balance of this. So, we know a little bit about the cap recapture penalty. We don't know how many actual dollars are going into Mike Richards' pocket. That's something that hopefully we'll be able to nail down in the next, little while. A lot of times people are more willing to talk about this several days after the fact or several weeks after the fact rather than on the day. But it sounds as if both sides are satisfied with the outcome. I wouldn't say happy with the outcome,
right,
but I think both are satisfied and it makes the matter go away. And I think that's the thing that both wanted. They wanted this thing, they wanted it put to bed. I mean, from a King's perspective, so this is the last of the three incidents that really dogged them last year. There was the Jarrett Stoll thing. There was this thing. There was the Slavovoynov thing. So they've managed to make them all go away. So they're one game into their season. They played lousy in that game. But I think the hope is that now that last year's baggage is put behind them, they can focus on the task at hand, which is trying to get back into the playoffs.
But you understand why, from my vantage point, and it's, I use this term with you all the time. It's kind of the crazy sports talk show host where you want to yell and scream about something. That vantage point being that, had they gone the traditional buyout route, it would have been a pretty steep penalty to buy this player out in terms of the cap hit. I find, you mentioned it before, the three. Jarrett Stoll leaves as a free agent. Slavovoynov goes back to Russia. But they never tried this with Slavovoynov. If I understand it correctly, they still retain his NHL rights, do they not?
Yeah, and they claimed, although whether that it's true or not, that they were going to go down the same path. If Voinov hadn't, jumped, they would have pushed him. And they are on the record. It was part of their official release when the Voinov thing resolved itself. And then you could sort of call it a threat after the fact, but it's there in black and white. If this player hadn't voluntarily left the country and sought employment, somewhere in Russia, I think he's playing for St. Petersburg, that they would have tried the material breach approach with him too. So it'll be interesting to see, now that this one has been put away, if somewhere down the road another team also goes down this path, because there's lots of ways. I mean, the standard player's contract is, I you know, I don't look at it very often because I'm just, you know, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
So you need, you know, I prefer to have somebody who is a lawyer explain to me the language. And in this particular case, you know, the NHL was prepared to fight this because they felt that they had enough evidence to be able to argue this in front of an arbitrator. That is not the same as having enough evidence to argue it in a criminal case. So, you know, because there's burdens of proof are different, what you can admit into evidence is different, and it gets all complicated. And I'm sure that everybody that's listening right now is, you know, their eyes are glazing over. The most important thing from a hockey perspective is that, you know, from the National Hockey League's perspective and from the Players Association's perspective, this matter is put to bed. And I think that both of them hope that from here on in, if teams have a dispute, they don't go down this path, that you know, the teams buy out players, because that's what they collectively bargained. You know, when a player is underperforming and you no longer have a need or a reason to have him, you know, there are provisions to, you know, that in the same way, like if you get tired of me, they get tired of you, you know, we negotiate a severance package, you know, off we go, and we go to work for somebody else. And that was collectively bargained. And I think that the hope on both sides is that they just stick to that rather than going down the path that the Kings went down with Mike Richards.
What does your gut tell you? I mean, it would be an extreme case, but now that, I hate to say the door's been opened, because it was never really fully open. We don't know what the end result would be, but is it out of the realm of possibility within the lifetime of this CBA that another team might try to go down the material breach road again?
I absolutely think it's possible. It would depend on what the breach is and what the dollars on the contract were. You know, the part of the reason that the Kings went down this, because there was just a lot of money at stake, $22 million. That's a lot of money, even for an organization as rich as AEG, which owns the Kings. That's a lot of money to pay someone not to play. And frankly, I think that there was a little bit of they took it personally, I think. And that's, you know, lots of people have, you know, have tried to compare this to the Voinov thing and to the Stoll thing. The reason that they took it so personally was that, you know, if you remember, after the Kings beat the Rangers in the Stanley Cup, it was a topic of conversation going into that series. The Rangers had Brad Richards, the Kings had Mike Richards. Both of these guys were underachieving for the contracts that they had. It was the last opportunity to exercise a compliance buyout. And the Rangers did it with Brad Richards and said, you know, we love this guy, but we don't love him at however many millions of dollars were left on the contract. And the Kings sat down with Mike Richards, and he said, it looked the general manager in the eye, I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to, you know, prove to you that I'm not on this steady decline, because he hadn't played very well for a couple of years for them. And there were issues about, you know, like how, you know, he'd had multiple concussions. Was that affecting his play? The game was so much faster. He was never very quick. You know, could Mike Richards play? And so they made a decision that everyone thought was a bad business decision, but they did it because of out of a loyalty for a player that helped them win two cups. You know, he had a greater impact, obviously, in the first one than the second. I would suggest he was more of a passenger or a bit player. I mean, however you want to, you know, support guy on that second championship team. But they did it out of loyalty. And, you know, like, it's hard for me because I prize loyalty and friendships and in business relationships and everything. So, you know, it's hard to be critical of somebody making a decision out of reasons of loyalty. But I also think they felt that loyalty was betrayed because he didn't play any better. And then he ran into some issues. And so I think that's, you know, part of why it went down that path. They felt a little betrayed by him.
Eric Datchuk from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. So much baseball in the last couple of days here on the radio station. It really hasn't allowed for much of a conversation, at least I haven't had much of a conversation, about kind of the fallout of a early part of the season. And you've done this a little longer than me, but I've done it for a while. There is a tendency to overreact to season openers and home openers. Are there teams that, I mean, clearly the local hockey heroes took one on the chin, but what do you make of the first couple of days, or do you wait till next week before we really reserve judgment?
Yeah, I always throw out the first game, even the first week of the season. It just takes time for everyone to find their their game and their place. I mean, you know, I think the NHL preseason is starting to look a little bit like the NFL. I mean, if you remember, you know, the NFL now, you know, starters don't seem to play the final game. You know, they get into a little bit of action in the third game of a four-game NFL preseason. And the big thing is that you just don't want your key players hurt. And, you know, and I think that more and more NHL teams are going down that path, too. I mean, the Flames lost T.J. Brody and Joe Colburn. And, you know, you can be sure it's like, oh, God, you know, in a meaningless game that, you know, these guys were going to be on the team, they were going to play, we know what they can do, there was nothing at stake. And so I just don't see teams firing on all cylinders the minute they drop the puck on the first night. And then, you know, then when you have opening night, especially when you got a young team, you know, there's all the hype, there's the excitement, there's the ceremonies. You know, I just thought, you know, watching the Flames that, you know, they were over-energized. I mean, sometimes you just have to play smart, play mm-hmm. within yourself, play controlled. I mean, the game is all about systems these days, right? And so, you know, if you're running around and not playing your system, you get breakdowns like you saw in the first game. So I think, you know, the excess energy, you know, just not playing smart hockey, I mean, that's one game. Now, you know, if 5 games into the season or 10 games into the season they're 2-8, then we have to start looking at root causes. But I'm prepared to dismiss opening night and even opening week because of jitters, because of, you know, trying to get everybody on the same page after having, you know, various lineups in the exhibition season. I mean, you know, in every game, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. But, I mean, I watched a lot of hockey last night, and you know, you watch, I mean, to me, the most fascinating game was the Dallas-Colorado game. Yep. I mean, I thought Colorado was terrible in the exhibition season, and all of a sudden they're out to this 4-1 lead, and I'm thinking, yeah, brother, you know, it proves you once again how little you can read into that. And then they collapsed in the third period and ended up losing the game. It was a very entertaining hockey game. But it's just, you know, it's just too early, I guess, is what I'm saying, to see patterns and trends.
I'm not sure if you heard, but it appears everybody in Calgary has. Buffalo's lost Robin Lehner for a while, mm-hmm. goaltending injury, and with 3 goalies. I guess, naturally, every time that happens, the Calgary Flames will prick up their ears. What do you make of Lehner's injury first for Buffalo, and is there any logic to even having a conversation about possibly swapping a goalie?
Yeah, I think there is, although I have to, you know, truth be told, I did not text Brad Treliving today, so everything I'm going to say from here on is guesswork. It's not based on knowledge. But I would say, yeah, there is a fit. I mean, from what little we know already, that, you know, this is not a short-term injury. And, you know, Buffalo has a couple of guys in the minors, and they have Chad Johnson, who at different times has looked like a pretty good NHL goaltender. But I think that they really believe that they are turning a corner. We spent a lot of money on Ryan O'Reilly. They've got the Jack Eichel hype. I think that if you are not sure about your goaltending, you know, your season can go down the drain in a hurry. So I would not be surprised if the two teams have talked. I mean, you know, I think Calgary has made it clear that they would like to, you know, get rid of this goaltending surplus, and I think that they're prepared to make it happen, you know, maybe by sweetening the pot financially. So it's just a matter of trying to find a fit. I also think that Buffalo will be calling around because I think there's a couple of other goalie options out there. Yeah. I mean, Ben Scriven's cleared waivers. You know, if you are strictly looking for somebody to play behind Chad Johnson, you know, I think that there are cheaper ways to go. But I think that if, you know, if you really want an established, well, I mean, Jonas Hiller is the only established guy, but Carey Rambo is a guy that I think a lot of people like too. And I believe that one of those two guys will be the odd man out when push comes to shove. So yeah, it makes perfect sense to me that they're talking, and then I guess we'll see. But it's hard for me to believe that Buffalo will go indefinitely with the status quo. It's possible that they're just waiting to get a very firm diagnosis on Lehner, and if they deem it to be 2 months, 3 months, that length of an injury, then I think you have to make a move, and I think the team best positioned to remedy their needs is Calgary.
Happy Thanksgiving, my friend. Enjoy your long weekend.
All right. Thanks, Rob.